Hello and welcome to the January 2014 IFRIC Update podcast. My name is Michael Stewart, Director of Implementation Activities, and I'm joined by four members of the team to talk about the proceedings at the January meeting of the IFRS Interpretations Committee. Now, the views that you'll hear today are those of the presenters and not necessarily those of the IFRS Interpretations Committee or the International Accounting Standards Board. The formal details of the committee's activities can be found in the IFRIC update newsletter that is available on the ISB website. First issue that we'll look at is one relating to the recognition of tax assets when an entity has an uncertain tax position. Now, Leo Piombino, can you tell us about what this issue relates to?
Yes, thank you. In some jurisdictions, tax laws require an entity to make an immediate payment when a tax examination results in additional charge, even when the entity intends to appeal against the charge. The submitter thinks that there is diversity in the approach used to determine whether an asset should be recognized for the amount potentially recoverable from the tax authority. Some entities use a probable threshold, whereas other entities use a virtually certain threshold. The submitter asks the Interpretation Committee to clarify whether IS-12 and a probable threshold is applied to determine whether to recognize an asset or whether the guidance in IS-37 and a virtually certain threshold should be applied.
And what are the results of the Interpretation Committee discussions?
The Interpretation Committee noted that paragraph 12 of IS-12 provides guidance on the recognition of current tax asset and current tax liabilities, and that, according to this paragraph, if the amount of taxes already paid in respect of current and prior periods exceed the amount due for those periods, the excess shall be recognized as an asset. The committee noted that, in the specific fact partner described by the submitter, an asset is recognized if the amount of cash paid, which is a certain amount, exceed the amount of tax expected to be due, which is an uncertain amount. The Interpretation Committee tentatively decided not to add this issue to its agenda because the guidance in S12 on the recognition of current tax assets and liabilities is sufficiently clear.
Okay, so the committee reached a tentative agenda decision. So what are the next steps for it?
The next steps are that the committee will discuss this issue in its May meeting, and The deadline for provide comment of this tentative agenda decision is the 14th of April.
Okay, thank you. Now, our second issue that we want to look at relates to some issues related to IS-1 presentation of financial statements. Now, Denise Durant, you were looking at this. Could you describe briefly what the issue is about?
Yes, Michael, certainly. The Interpretations Committee received a request to clarify the application of some of the presentation requirements in IS-1. And, well, the main concern raised was the absence of definitions in IS-1 and the lack of implementation guidance, because they claim that this gives significant flexibility and that this might impair the comparability and understandability of the financial statements.
So what were the main areas of concern that were identified in this request?
Well, there were basically four areas of concern that were identified by the submitter. The first one was the presentation of expenses by function. The second one was the presentation of additional lines, heading and subtotals. The third one was the presentation of additional statements or columns in the primary financial statements. And fourth was the application of the materiality and aggregation requirements in IS-1.
And what was the Interpretation Committee's view on these issues?
Well, the Interpretations Committee noted that, certainly IS-1 permits flexibility in the presentation, but it also includes various principles for the presentation and content of the financial statements, as well as more detailed requirements that are intended to limit such flexibility in the presentation.
Okay, so there are limits there and the flexibility is only within those limits.
That's right, yes.
Can you give us some examples of those principles in IS-1?
Well, for instance, I could mention paragraphs 15, 16 and 17 of IS-1. And these paragraphs set out the overall requirements for a fair presentation of the financial position, financial performance, and cash flows of the entity. So fair presentation implies the application of IFRSs, as well as providing relevant, reliable, comparable, and understandable information.
And if we apply those principles you just mentioned to some of the issues raised by the submitter, what would be our main conclusions?
Well, let me give you some examples. An entity could choose to present an analysis of its expenses, either by their nature or by their function, on the basis of whichever provides information that is reliable and more relevant. Alternatively, an entity could also present additional line items or headings or subtotals in the income statement when such presentation is relevant to an understanding of the entity's financial performance, and also when these additional headings, line items, or subtotals assist users in understanding better the financial performance of an entity. An entity could also present additional information in the notes when this information is not presented elsewhere in the financial statements and when this information is relevant to an understanding of any of the financial statements. And by the way, Michael, I would like to mention that in this respect, the Interpretations Committee noted that providing additional information additional columns to provide this information in the primary financial statements would not be likely to meet this requirement in IS-1 that I just mentioned.
Okay. And so what is the next step as far as this issue is concerned?
Well, on the basis of the existing principles in IS-1 that I have mentioned, some of them, and the fact that some of the issues raised have been already discussed in the Disclosure Initiative project from the ISB, the Interpretations Committee determined that it was not necessary to issue an interpretation or an amendment to IS-1. So the Interpretations Committee decided to reject this issue and not to add it to its agenda. We are planning to expose this tentative agenda decision for 2 months, and we will bring back an agenda decision to the committee at the future meeting.
Thank you. Okay, for our third issue, I'll turn to Wonhi Han. Now, Wonhi, we had various implementation issues relating to IFRS 11 joint arrangements that we looked at the November Interpretations Committee meeting, and the committee prioritised some of those issues. What did we bring back to this meeting, the January meeting, to discuss further?
Yes, Michael. In this meeting, the Interpretations Committee discussed one of the two priority issues that the committee identified in its November 2013 meeting. The issue discussed at this meeting was whether an assessment of other facts and circumstances should take into account facts and circumstances that do not involve contractual and legal enforceable terms. The staff also presented some other supplementary issues relating to the assessment of other facts and circumstances, but the Interpretations Committee decided to address those issues at a future meeting.
Okay, so what was discussed at this meeting?
Yes, the Interpretation Committee considered 2 views regarding the assessment of other facts and circumstances. First view was that the assessment should focus on whether other facts and circumstances create enforceable rights to the assets and obligations for the liabilities. Second view was that the assessment should also consider the design and purpose of the joint arrangement, the entity's business needs, and the entity's past practices. The Interpretations Committee noted that IFRS 11 requires the classification of a joint arrangement as a joint operation or a joint venture to depend on rights to the assets and obligations for the liabilities of the parties to the arrangement, and that rights and obligations by nature are enforceable. The committee also noted that IFRS 11 describes that when other facts and circumstances give the parties rights to assets and obligations for the liabilities relating to the joint arrangement, the assessment of other facts and circumstances would lead to the joint arrangement being classified as a joint operation. Consequently, the Interpretation Committee noted that the assessment of other facts and circumstances should be focused on whether those facts and circumstances create enforceable rights to the assets and obligations for the liabilities. The Interpretation Committee therefore tentatively decided not to add this issue to its agenda.
Okay, so another tentative agenda decision that will be open for comment for 60 days.
Yes, that's right.
Now, the committee went a little further than this. It talked about some other aspects of the issues related to IFRS 11, but we'll be bringing those back to next meeting. So what can we expect at the next meeting?
Yes. In this meeting, the Interpretation Committee noted that it is important to understand how and why particular facts and circumstances create rights and obligations that result in the joint arrangement being classified as a joint operation. So the committee asked the staff to develop examples to analyze this matter. The committee also noted that these examples should include fact patterns illustrating the supplementary issues which were presented but not addressed at this meeting, and should consider the application of IFRS 11 to some common joint arrangement structure. The committee also requested that this analysis consider the implications for accounting within separate financial statements. After the committee has considered this further analysis, it will decide whether to recommend adding examples or other guidance to the standard.
Thank you. And for our fourth issue today, we'll turn to Koichiro Kuramuchi. The issue we want to look at is relating to investment entities. And Koichiro, the Interpretations Committee had started to look at some issues related to investment entities at the last meeting. It continued discussions this time and reached consensus on one of these issues. Which one was this?
Right, Michael. So during the January meeting, the Interpretation Committee agreed one of the issues related to the investment entity amendments and proposed annual improvements. The issue is investment entity which provides investment-related services.
And so can you explain what the issue was?
Right. The investment entity amendments to IFRS 10 introduced an exception to the consolidation requirement. An investment entity measures its investments in subsidiaries at fair value rather than consolidating those subsidiaries, unless the subsidiary provides investment-related services. Where a subsidiary provides investment-related services, the investment entity consolidates the subsidiary. The submission was when an investment entity's subsidiary itself is an investment entity and additionally provide investment-related services, it is not clear whether the investment entity parent should measure the subsidiary at fair value or consolidate it.
Okay, so this subsidiary is both an investment entity and provides services, so which bit of accounting guidance should it follow?
Exactly. So that's the case.
So what was the discussion of the committee at this meeting?
Right. At this meeting, the Interpretation Committee reviewed the IASB's discussions during the development of the investment entity amendments in 2012. The Interpretations Committee noted that the IASB separately discussed the circumstances where an investment entity provides investment-related services. One, an investment entity provides investment-related service to investors. Two, investment-related service to third parties. And three, investment-related activities to investees. The Interpretations Committee thought that the IASB's decision was clear that an investment entity parent should account for an investment entity subsidiary at fair value when that investment entity subsidiary provide investment-related service to its investors, or when it carried out investment-related activities in relation to investees. However, the Interpretations Committee acknowledged that the standard does not give guidance on the accounting by an investment entity parent for an investment entity subsidiary when that investment entity subsidiary provides investment-related service to third parties. The Interpretations Committee tentatively concluded that an investment entity parent should account for all investment entity subsidiaries in the same way, that is, measuring at fair value. And also, the Interpretations Committee noted that the accounting I just discussed is not that clear on the current standards and proposed that annual improvements.
Okay, thank you. So that will go into or go to the board next for their agreement. And if they agree, then we'll put it into the next cycle of annual improvements.
Exactly, right.
Thank you. That brings us to the end of the IFRIC Update podcast for January 2014. As a reminder, the full details of the proceedings of the committee can be found in the IFRIC Update newsletter, which is available on the ISB website. Now, included in there will be a total of 10 tentative agenda decisions, so that's including the ones that you heard discussed today, that are open for comment until the 14th of April 2014, and then the Interpretations Committee will consider the comments received on those in deciding whether and how to finalise those at the May 2014 meeting. Meanwhile, thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye.